embarrassing.
Senate Finance will come to order. Thank you for being here, Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green. We have five items on, or six perhaps, on the agenda for this morning, because we may have information on one bill that we've already heard that may have some information here by the time we get finished with the first part of this, that on House Bill 178 may also be added, because we did get the revised fiscal note. The first item we'll take up today is Senate Bill 46, the Senate operating version of the operating budget. And Ginger, if you'd come to the table, please. And for your information, she will go through, and I think when we talked last night about the work draft we had before us, that there were some omissions, corrections, et cetera, duplications that took place. And in the meantime, we have gotten a revised work draft CS before us. It's our request that you have amendments to us by 3 this afternoon, and we're going to schedule a continuation of Senate Finance till 4 p.m., at which time we'll consider amendments and get on our way. Ginger, we have Senate Bill 46 before us, and is the most recent version, Ginger, the work draft Y?
Yes, for the record, Ginger Blaisdell, Senator to staff to Senator Green. The work draft that we should all be looking at is version Y, and I believe all the members have a copy, and I believe that they are still trying to get them printed for the back table.
Okay. Senator Wilken, if you'll move work draft Y, then we'll use that as our CS with the correction.
Madam Chair, move that the committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 46 Finance Version Y, done by Kurtz on 5-3 as our working document.
I will object for explanation. Ginger, would you walk us through where we've come since last night, please?
Okay. Similar to yesterday's description, page 1 through 74 are the individual projects that you typically see in a capital budget. Those are all the agency requests. And most of those were originally requested by the governor. You will see a large section of grants to named recipients and grants to communities. Those are mostly the legislative added requests. And there are a few of those sprinkled in DOT and a couple of other agencies. So if you can't find your specific request, hopefully I can help you find that. Page 75 through 90 is the contingent section that would pay for SB 155 education projects. Those pages would not be funded if SB 155 does pass. If SB 155 does not pass this legislature, then those same education projects would be funded from the general fund. On page 91, section 6, there are $60 million of Almeretta Hess interest earnings that would be appropriated to these projects. And again, this one, there's another section on the capital income account that we need to have established before this particular section would go.
And that's the legislation we have up, 187, later today.
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Section 7 on 91 begins the standard language that you see in most capital appropriation budgets. It's authorization for LBNA, some general provisions that have been provided in just about every capital budget, sometimes in the operating budget, but typically capital. Starting on page 93, section 13 is the beginning of the supplemental appropriations that were originally presented under Senate Bill 66. No, Senate Bill 97. Mm-hmm. Senate Bill 97. So that will go from page 93 to about halfway down, page 106. This section did receive a couple of changes from yesterday's work draft version. On page 93, section 13, subsection F and G are two appropriations to the Department of Administration, Division of Retirement Benefits, for the work that's occurred on the SB 141. So you will see that different from the work draft. There is an amendment was provided, and it looks like it got missed somewhere in the drafting. On page 96, section 20 under fund transfers, items A, B, and C remain. Item D, which lost its D, but the words are still there, there's a line on line 17 and 18. It says the sum of $34,563,300 is appropriated from the general fund to the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund.
And that's supposed to say D prior to that?
No, it was supposed to have been removed entirely.
Okay, delete.
They got the letter out, but they didn't get the language out, so.
D for delete.
Yes. And then starting on section 21 is the gas pipeline appropriations that were in yesterday's version. Those have not changed. On page 106, lines 12 through 14, this is a ratification for the Qualified Trade Association contract. That is a change from yesterday's work draft. And so
what lines?
I had a...
What lines?
Page 106, lines 12 through 14. It's subsection D, expenditures by Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for a Qualified Trade Association contract for fiscal years ending June 30, 2003 and 2004. Are ratified, and that was a piece that was not in the bill that was offered yesterday. On the same page, page 106, section 36 begins the reappropriation section, and so that's where you can look to make sure that any funds that might be lapsing would be addressed in this particular section, and that would go from page 106 to page 119. And on page 119, section 52, starting with the Department of Administration, are also reappropriations, and those are the pieces that were originally offered in the supplemental bill in SB 97. And those items are offered here, still in the reappro section. And those go through page 122. Section 60 and 61 on page 122 are provisions for the Capital Income Fund. And I did receive a number of calls and emails yesterday regarding the necessity of having section 60 and 61 in the bill. If the Capital Income Fund language or bill passes today out of committee or, you know, passes through the legislature, this provision is still required. Apparently, if it is not in the bill, the funds are already appropriated to go into the permanent fund rather than to go into this income account. So it does need appropriation language in here.
So if the capital income fund did not pass, mm-hmm. our provisions on 187, this wouldn't matter.
It would just be a null and void.
And that's it. Are there any questions? Senator
Hoffman. Thank you, Madam Chair. Under agency requests, you said you might be able to assist us if we can't locate a couple of items, and I guess there are four that maybe you could help me locate that were agency requests by the governor. The first one was the Bethel Courthouse. Because of overcrowding, there was $825,000 for that facility. There was $233.9 thousand for the under the Health and Social Services for the security system for Bethel. There was...
What building was that?
The Health and Social Services, the security system for the youth facility.
Youth facility, okay.
And there was, under Commerce, there was $1 million for the Learning Center in Bethel. And the fourth item was $1 million in federal receipts under DNR for the Coastal Wetlands Grant. So those were four that I had, and I was wondering if there were others that may have been not included that were part of the agency requests, original agency requests.
Okay. Yes, Senator Hoffman, the Bethel Courthouse was requested by the governor's, in the governor's original request, and it was requested under Almeretta Hess bonds. And because the legislature has not passed a bond bill, we tried to find as many projects as possible that we could pay for with general funds or other funds. And this was one item that we just had to kind of make a choice. So, Health and Social Services, the youth facility security, I need to look that one up because I don't know if it was full funded or partially funded.
No, that was the department's number one priority for security. That was not funded at all.
Okay, that one I'll have to look up. I'm not sure about that particular one. The Learning Center, I think that, again, most of these were Almeretta Hess bonds. And
that was general fund.
That one was straight general funds?
Yes.
Okay, that one, again, I'm sure it was just a choice that was made in trying to fund everything.
And the New Shigac, which was no funds by the state of Alaska. It was federal receipt authority for the New Shigac Bay for the Coastal Wetlands Grant.
Right. Is that the Elekagig area?
Alugwak.
The river. Okay.
River.
There were...
Watershed.
Right. There were three projects that were similar to this type of appropriation. They were 100% federal funds. One was this $1 million coastal wetland money. There was also a forest legacy appropriation or request, because right, it wasn't appropriated. And there was also a Snyder parcel in Gustavus. All three of those were federal requests with no general funds attached. And that was a policy call where we just needed to understand more on the use of the land and the impact it might have on the state's DNR having to help manage it.
Well, you know, so, Madam Chair, on those three, I think at whatever point you would so see fit, I would ask that DNR answer that, because I think what we will see in the future will be more problems like we have on the Chitna Dipnet situation, where we have lands that are owned in private hands that can be averted in the future. You know, obviously, I think that the Chitna Dipnet fishery is problematic, and I don't know if there's a solution to that, but I think that acquisitions such as this can alleviate those type of problems in the future, where there are willing parties and it is not costing the state of Alaska any funds. So
and I think, Senator Hoffman, correct me if I'm wrong, but were you on the resources subcommittee?
No, I was not.
Because I remember the information comfort came from that discussion, where there was some questions about the appropriateness of the line of command and change, and who's being paid to set land aside that we felt like they had every ability to set aside for whatever purpose they chose, and did not have to be paid by the federal government. And I think that was
part of the discussion as well, and we can certainly try to get more information on it.
Right. If we get more information, then I'll have an amendment prepared for the 3 o'clock meeting with additional backup, and hopefully we can have a discussion and have the department at the table to respond to questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. So we'll look forward to further continuing this discussion at 4 p.m. And anyone who wishes to bring forth information in the meantime, please do so. Oh, Ginger, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If I can make one request, if you call in a requested change, I may not have a chance to answer the phone. If my phone went like yesterday, I was not able to get back to people until about 8 o'clock last night. So I do request that if you have concerns or questions, if you can present it in writing as an amendment, that would really help me tremendously.
So. Do you want to have that brought to your office even before then, before the amendment's finally prepared, if they have the time? Or?
Sure. Yeah, that would be just fine. I can help
you
as best as I can.
Better.
Yeah,
we'll be able to have those before noon.
Good.
Thank you.
Very good.
Okay.
Is there any other information or any other questions from the members? Thank you very much. Move on to the next bill. We'll take a brief at ease to allow everyone to... I'd like to go back to Senate Bill 46 and remove my objection to adopting the CS. If there's no further objection, we have adopted the Y draft of the CS for Senate Bill 46. Next item on the schedule is House Bill 187, the Amarada Hess income account. And Pete Eklund is here on behalf of the sponsor or the carrier of the bill. Pete.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Peter Eklund, staff to Representative Kevin Meyer on the House Finance Committee. House Bill 187 would establish the Alaska Income Fund within the general fund and would authorize the deposit into that fund earnings received from the so-called, as we know, Amarada Hess lawsuit. In 1992, the state's Amarada Hess oil and gas litigation was headed to trial. Both state and federal judges expressed concerns about the capacity of Alaskan judges and juries to participate in the case on an impartial basis in light of the fact that earnings on that portion of any recovery in the case would be deposited into the permanent fund and be used to pay permanent fund dividends to all Alaskan juries and judges. AS 3713-145D was enacted, which deposits into the principal of the permanent fund the earnings of all amounts received from settlement of this case and directed that no earnings of the AMS principal be used for dividends. Thus, the concern about impartiality was resolved by disallowing the earnings from the settlement from being used in calculating the annual dividend amount. The Amarada Hess litigation is now settled, though a possibility of reopener subject to arbitration remains. Approximately $424 million from this case, including earnings on the settlement receipts and inflation proofing, is contained within the Amarada Hess subaccount. This bill proposes to keep that Amarada Hess subaccount at the $424 million level, and that portion of inflation proofing that would have otherwise that would have been deposited into the principal of the Amarada Hess subaccount will now be deposited into the other portion of the permanent fund principal. HB 187 would authorize the deposit of the earnings from the Amarada Hess principal, estimated to be $25 to $30 million per year, to the new Alaska Capital Income Fund. Money deposited into the Alaska Capital Income Fund can be used for any valid public purpose. And Madam Chair, I would just note that the capital budget bill you just took up earlier proposes to spend roughly $60 million from these earnings in the capital budget. This legislation has no effect on the dividend calculation and is neutral on the dollar amount of each Alaskan's dividend. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sentence again.
This legislation is neutral on the dividend. It has no impact on the dividend calculation or the dividend amount. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to answer any questions that might come up.
Thank you, Pete. Are there any questions? Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pete, when I'm looking at the chart here, why wouldn't we just take the, instead of going to this income fund, why wouldn't it just go to the debt reimbursement fund that we draw out of?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilken, that is a possibility. If the committee wanted to change the earnings going from the Alaska Income Fund directly to the Debt Retirement Fund, that is a possibility. One of the reasons, Mr. Chairman, the legislation doesn't propose to do that this time is that the Debt Retirement Fund is a sweepable fund, and if we appropriate the money for capital projects, there is no concern about sweepability.
Okay. This in no way says this could not be used for debt retirement.
Through the Chair, Madam Chairman, that is correct. It can be used for any valid public purpose. Once the money is in the Alaska Income Fund, it can be used for debt retirement fund, capital, operating, debt, future bond obligations.
Okay. So the income fund is non-sweepable?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkins, actually, the income fund is sweepable, but if, as proposed in the capital budget earlier today, that money, the money that would have that's going to be deposited in the Alaska Income Fund, yeah, is then going to be proposed to be used for capital projects in the capital budget.
So it still requires language in the capital budget or in a budget to keep it from being sweepable.
Once, Madam Chairman,
go ahead.
When the money is appropriated from the Alaska Income Fund to capital projects, right, those capital projects are then non-sweepable, Madam Chairman.
If it's used in a capital project or for debt reimbursement and it's paid out, it's not sweepable. Correct? Did I get it
Madam,
wrong?
Madam Chairman, the balances, any balances in the debt retirement fund are sweepable, Madam Chairman. If projects, capital projects that have been appropriated, mm-hmm, are non-sweepable.
Okay. Are there further questions? Senator Stedman.
Let me explain, Madam Chair, we could have some more explanations on the mechanics of sweepability and why this shouldn't be or couldn't be structured to be blocked from a sweep. And then the second question would be what's going to be used to calculate the earnings that goes into the Alaska Income Fund.
How is the earnings calculated? Okay. Please, you want to take those? Can it be blocked from the sweep, and how is the earnings calculated?
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, most funds are sweepable. What is proposed in the capital budget is to expend the money that flows into the Alaska Capital Income Fund for capital projects. Once the money is appropriated for capital projects, those capital projects are not subject to the sweep. But most funds that we have, there's only a few exceptions. One being the new education fund that we created this year, House Bill 158, the PCE endowment fund. There are very few funds that are non-sweepable.
I'm sure if I could. I guess I'm still struggling with why we shouldn't block it from being sweeped. What's the rationale? I recognize that most funds are sweepable. There's just a handful that aren't. But what was the philosophy of treating this with the vast majority of making it sweepable?
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, that the Department of Administration is the entity who determines which funds are sweepable and which funds are not, and they have many different standards and calculations that they use. I'm familiar with a couple of them, and it's basically up to their determination about which funds are sweepable. And what it comes down to is basically are the funds available to the general fund, and the Department of Administration would have to comment further on it to give you a better answer.
That answer your question? Satisfied?
Yeah, and then I guess we can go to the next part of it is go over how you're going to, how the calculation is run to decide what amount of funds are going into the income fund.
Through the chair, I'm not sure if somebody from the permanent fund is here. They would be best to answer that question. But through the chair, Senator Stedman, the earnings on this sub-account would be calculated the same way as the earnings of the rest of the permanent fund principal, permanent fund earnings reserve. It's calculated in the same manner as the rest of the permanent fund.
If I could, Madam Chair, is there any smoothing mechanism in place, or is it going to be just an annual calculation and then automatically moved over? And then at what time, I assume that this calculation would be at the end of the fiscal year, then we would know the governor would know when he has to produce his budget by December 15th, the exact dollar amount. Is that correct? Or?
The chair, Senator Stedman, the transfer would not happen until the end of the fiscal year. You're correct. When you could estimate amounts earlier in the fiscal year, but ultimately the end of the fiscal year will determine what those earnings are. I forgot the other part of your question.
Pete, even though that's all speakable, to kind of get to what Senator Stedman's saying, is there any way to do a calculation for this year based on the occurrence, the actual of last year? So you take away the estimation?
Madam Chairman, I think each year we'll just have to have an estimate. And as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, that estimate gets more and more refined. As I understand it right now, we had been looking at $30 million per year. I think it might be coming in something a couple million dollars short of that now, Madam Chairman. But we will just
so
have
the
to.
Range of estimation at this point is pretty narrow. You can guess within 2 or 3 million up or down what it's probably going to be. They're forecasting that close?
I believe so, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Stedman.
This is a little different than estimating oil prices, because we look at volume and price and we guess what's going to be at the end of the year, in the fiscal year. When we're operating within the portfolio confines of the permanent fund, it depends on their buying and selling and their profit taking or losses and then dividend income. And why, for budgetary purposes, would you not have a one-year lag on this? So instead of having at the end of the fiscal year, anything that's left in the Alaska Income Fund swept, why wouldn't you put in a mechanical one-year lag? So for the budget that's being put together in October, November, and December, you actually go back to the ending balance of the Amerita Hess as of June 30th. The state would know exactly what the proceeds are to come into the Alaska Income Fund, and to the budgetary process there would be no variation, because we would have a calculated figure. Why would we want to go forward then and put more uncertainties into our budgeting cycle? And
the chair, Senator Stedman, the governor's to the chair, Senator Stedman, the capital budget was proposed to be funded with $340 million of Amerita Hess bonding. That appears that it's not going to happen. We've looked for different sources to try to make the capital budget whole, or try to look for different funding sources to fund the capital budget. And this was one area that the House was comfortable with using these funds to try to fund this year's capital budget.
Madam Chair, let me rephrase the question, because the question isn't what the mechanics are this year, and I understand with the request from the governor to use Amrita Hess and the macerations that we're going through now, but this is, the question's more of a policy decision. And, you know, do we want to put forth mechanisms within the budgetary process to get a higher predictability of the revenue stream that we're going to be working with? In other words, do we want to embed a one-year delay on this so we always look backwards 1 year and we know exactly what the proceeds are into the Alaska Income Fund? Because for every given year, you're going to have financial markets going up and down, and you're going to have portfolio managers making decisions whether to take or not take profits depending on what's going on in the marketplace, and then you have your dividend income coming in. And to me, it would make a lot cleaner budgetary cycle to embed a virtual one-year look back. So when the administration, no matter who is in the administration, sits down in October and November and December and puts forth their packet, they're going back to June 30th and looking at what was the income or what was the earnings of the Amrita Hess settlement versus looking forward and trying to guess. Because as we all know, financial markets can turn relatively short periods of time. And I think if we take it one step further, in the long run, I don't think it'll make any difference as far as, it's not going to make any difference the total dollars spent.
Because there's going to be. Let me ask a question. Let me interrupt you just for a minute, because this may already be taken care of in this. Staff just handed me a note that said, via the retroactivity. So the one-year lag we're talking about is already in this, is it not? If this goes back to July 1, 2004, we're already talking about this year's actual. And it would only be, this was 2001, 2005. So we're already doing a look back on the first half of it, correct?
Madam Chairman, you're correct. There is a retroactivity clause that would allow the FY05 earnings to be used in the FY06 capital budget.
So the FY05 portion is an actual.
It's very close to an actual.
Close to an actual until July 30th, June 30th, okay. Okay. In a conversation I think I was in the other day, and we were talking about what actually occurs with this and what the provisions of this would allow. It's not like you start on this date and end on this date. You still have kind of a flow between the years. And you have somewhat of a cushion, do you not, to allow you to go as long as you have not exceeded the next year's allowable. Say, for instance, we put $60 million in our capital budget this year, and on January the 17th next year, we can recalculate and say, you know, we're going to be $2 million short. We have a mechanism to go in and repair that in the next year. It's not like we're going to overextend and go into that account. We would either decide to not continue the project, or we would do a supplemental, which I hope we do not have to do. So it's a little more flexible than when we do our accounting by day and by month and by year, then we can calculate outside. I don't know if the discussion was had on doing a year look back. But the reality is that interest has, by that time, has been redeposited, correct? Has never left the AmHess account until we draw out an actual. I mean, it would have been gone back into the account by that time, would it not? Or
Madam
confused
Chairman,
it?
The earnings would flow to the capital income fund, and then from the capital income fund, they would flow to whatever appropriation the legislature chose. In this instance, there's appropriations in the capital budget that would appropriate that money from the classic capital income fund to various capital projects. And to the extent that at the end of FY06, if there were not enough funds in the capital income fund to pay for all those projects, there could be supplemental appropriation to those projects. There could be the following year in FY07, those deposits into the Alaska Income Fund could be used to fund those previously authorized projects. So, Madam Chairman, there would be ways to make those appropriations in this year's capital budget whole.
So you can do a correcting, you can correct the shortfall or whatever. Senator Stedman.
I understand the backfill mechanisms. The question is it's a policy call. We can use 2010 instead of today. You know, in 2010, you know, would we want to be able to, do we want to take the volatility in an estimate and with the potential of having to backfill or not backfill, or do we want to work with a number certain? I guess that's the question. I personally would prefer a number certain than continue to add volatility to the income stream, recognizing that, well, that's not a, let me rephrase that. I think it'd be easier in the budgetary process to have a number certain because it's going to fluctuate, particularly when we have less favorable financial markets. You know, the numerics are going to be smaller than if we have, you know, robust markets. We'll have more money flowing out into the income fund. And it's just a way to not have to be subjected to the possibility of backfill.
Okay, so now would your, is there anything in this, Pete, that suggests that we have to use all interest available?
No, Madam Chairman, it's subject to appropriation.
If, on the worst case scenario, if we use Senator Stedman's suggestion and we put a number certain in here, could we run into a situation where there might not be that amount interest earned in that particular year?
That is correct, Madam Chairman. Yeah, we could, you could, the legislature could choose to say $100 million and the interest earnings may only be 20. I mean,
right. Okay, and Senator Shipman, do you have further questions at this time, or do you want to?
No, I think I made the point, and if there's less enthusiastic support, then we'll move on, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. On a separate subject, in the sponsor statement, fourth paragraph, it says maintaining a static balance in Amrata Hess principle. I assume that that doesn't mean that if there's unrealized gains as a result of the growth of the value of whatever instruments that money is invested in, that that those don't, well, I assume that the growth in the value of whatever those things are invested in stays in the Amrata Hess principal account.
The Chair, Senator Dyson, the principal balance as far as realized, not unrealized gains or losses, would stay static at the $424 million. And I don't know if anybody at the permanent fund is behind here. They would be best to answer that. But unrealized gains and unrealized losses, I believe, are not going to be and the principal amount is 424. Unrealized gains and losses will happen. And as far as I understand it, it's not going to. It's an accounting, obviously, situation with the permanent fund, but they would be best to answer your question. I'm not sure if anybody's here.
Yeah, so when it says maintaining a static balance, that doesn't mean that we are prohibiting this fund from growing because of prudent investments over time. And in actuality depreciating that balance because of inflation.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, the current practice with Amherst subaccount is there are normally earnings from the Amherst subaccount. The permanent fund would calculate right now the inflation proofing needed for that subaccount. They would then subtract out of the earnings from the subaccount that inflation proofing amount. And the current practice is the legislature then reappropriates the rest of the earnings above inflation proofing from the subaccount back into the subaccount, because none of the earnings can be used in the dividend calculation. So the Amherst subaccount grows currently by not just inflation, but all of the earnings, and it cannot be used in the dividend calculation. What the proposal is to freeze the principal amount for accounting purposes at $424 million. The inflation proofing part of that, the inflation proofing amount that's applicable to that $424 million, instead of being deposited back into the Amherst subaccount, would be deposited into the other portion of the principal. So the principal's inflation proof at the correct amount, just not that Amherst subaccount that cannot be used in the dividend calculation.
Yeah, we're not communicating. I understand about inflation proofing, and I understand about earnings. I'm talking about the value of the whatever the money's invested in. So in my mind, if you bought stocks, stocks declare dividends, they have earnings. The stock might also appreciate in value. That's different than what I call earnings. And then on addition to that, we as a legislature may do something we have called inflation proofing, which I think is pretty silly if you've got an investment that's appreciating because it's a good investment. I'm talking about the increase in value of whatever that's invested in. And I want, what I'm hoping you'll assure me is that if whatever it's invested in appreciates, that money from the appreciation, which we I think call realized gains, won't be pulled out of that account to be spent.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dyson, I believe the Department of Law is behind me, and they can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the answer to your question is unrealized gains and unrealized losses are not included in the calculation of principal.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Stedman? I'm
having some conceptual challenges here. Why would we take an asset and whatever number we want to fix it at, $424 million, and not inflation proof it, and let it erode at 3% a year, when we could, in fact, inflation proof it, because we're still not going to affect the rest of the permanent fund anyway, because this is a separate carved out entity. And then take the inflation proofing calculation that's embedded in the Amherst Hess monies, instead of adding it back in and keeping our purchasing power constant over time, take that inflation calculation of the dollar amount and put it over into the principal of the permanent fund, which is already over inflation proof the way they do their calculations anyway, and this would just accelerate that. So when we go forward 10 years or 20 years, 25 years, all of a sudden we don't have the purchasing power of 425, we have the purchasing power of 300 or 350 or 300, and every year we go backwards. I would like to have a response to that. I don't understand the conceptual long-range goal here.
To the Chair, Senator Stedman, there was some discussion in the House about whether or not to inflation-proof the sub-account. The governor's proposal did not contemplate inflation-proofing the sub-account nor the other portion of principal with the governor's proposal did not contemplate inflation proofing at all, or accounting for the inflation proofing of the sub account at all. the House decided that they did not want to diminish the value of the total principal of the permanent fund. So they've included the subaccount in the calculation of the total principal and inflation-proof that to the correct amount. Your question to whether or not we want to grow the subaccount, which cannot be used for dividends, but can be used in this instance to spin off money to be used for any valid public purpose, is a policy call.
Understood. I think one of the things that we could easily fall into is a short-term view, and I recognize the governor, with all due respect to the governor, had a concept that he brought forward. This is entirely different. And I'm of the persuasion that we should look at it in the form it is, which is different, and look at it in the long range. And I personally don't want to see the slow erosion of the purchasing power. There doesn't seem to me to be any negative effect, because we're already under the current proposal before us, calculating out the inflation dollar amounts instead of putting it into the permanent fund, which is already inflation proof, put it back in to this principal, this $424 million, and at least keep our purchasing power constant over time. I think it's an easy fix. It's also conceptually an easy thing to walk away from inflation proofing. But when we come back together in 10 years or 20 years, we'll have substantially less capital available to us to implement.
If this pertains to the calculation, Rob Carpenter has some information he can share with us, if it would be okay with you, Pete. Or Rob, you want to come forward? And then, do you have a question about that or something else? Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
I guess the question is, does it go into the corpus, which is will be calculated for dividends, or do you want it for this purpose? And that's the question, that with the people's money, what do you think the people would want?
It's hard to say what the people would want. I guess it depends on what people you ask. But
they want bigger dividends.
I understand that there's a concern on protection of the permanent fund. But the Amerita Hess monies today, as we all realize, is a virtual subaccount of the Alaska Permanent Fund and has never had an effect on the dividends calculation. So if we carve the Amerita Hess money out, or leave it carved out like it is, but redirect the cash flow instead of into a continually growing entity that does the state no good at all, other than a growing pot of money, if we peel out the earnings under the same mannerism that the permanent fund is used to spend, and then and take the inflation proofing calculation, so at least we hold the purchasing power constant over time, I don't think there's going to be an issue with most of the Alaskan people.
Senator Jason.
Yeah, I have a question to Senator Stedman. I'm always a little surprised about, in quote, inflation proofing an investment. If an investment doesn't exceed the inflation, seems to me it's a lousy investment. And that what we've been calling inflation proofing is just kind of supplemental income to increase the principal, and I guess I would enjoy a discussion on why we should inflation proof investments as opposed to just making wise investments that ought to have traditionally doubled the CPI.
Any further comments?
I'd like to hear from the...
Okay, Rob, could you help us out, please?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Rob Carpenter with Legislative Finance. Do you have a specific question I can answer, or should I just start talking to you?
Could you just talk to us? I think you've heard the concern about how is that amount calculated. the interest?
It seems like one of the concerns is the AMHES portion being inflation-proofed, and how the income stream would stay very flat because the principal amount would not change. The principal idea behind the way they've done it is to avoid a change in the dividend, in the actual amount of the dividend. Because of the way the dividend is calculated, the AMHES portion is not included. The earnings, any part of it, is not included in the dividend calculation. Therefore, any inflation proofing of the AMHES portion will reduce future dividends, and that was trying to be avoided. And I can go more into that if you'd like.
I don't think so. Thank you. We appreciate that. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me see if I understand what Senator Stedman, where he's trying to lead us here. Today, let's just call it $400 million for math purposes. Today, what's been termed the self-licking ice cream cone, of $400 million just continues to grow, and it earns the permanent fund rate, which we know is 8% plus or minus. So each year, that $32 million gets added on top of the $400 million, and it just continues to grow. What this proposes to do is to take that $32 million and put it into the income fund, which we use as discretionary money for a public purpose. And what Senator Stedman is saying is we would put it in, would put the income stream in two places here. We would take 3% and keep it in the $400 million, and take the 5%. Assuming 3% is inflation, we'd keep the 5%, and the 5 times 400 would be $20 million that would go into the income fund, so that the purchasing power, because we took that 3%, would remain static, and static would be defined as the purchasing power 10 years from now would be the same purchasing power as today. I think so. Senator Stedman has offered a policy call whether we want, does static mean static in dollar terms, $400 million, or does it mean static in purchasing power, which would mean there'd have to be a diversion, or the funds would have to go to two different places, not just one. Is that, Senator Stedman, is that where we are?
That's pretty close. So if we look out 10 years, we sit down, we still have the equivalent purchasing power of $400 million working for us.
And it goes back to where Senator Dyson started the question, what is the definition of static? If we want static purchasing power, then we have to set aside monies each year recognizing inflation. If we want it to be static in dollar terms, we take the bill the way it is. Would that be right?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkin, there was discussion of this issue in the House, and in rough numbers, I don't remember exactly, but in rough numbers, if we inflation-proof the AMHES sub-account with its own earnings, it would be roughly, instead of having a payout of roughly $30 million a year, it'd pay out roughly $21 million a year. And we were trying to, at this time, cobble together a capital budget and use as many funded sources as possible. And the decision was made to go with the proposal in front of you and possibly come back and look at this whole situation in the future.
Is your conversation finished? I know Senator Dyson has it coming.
I think I'm finished for now, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dyson.
Yes. I can't integrate the answers I've heard here. It seems to me that the 400 and plus million will appreciate in value and have increasing purchasing power and increasing earnings without, quote, inflation proving it. What am I missing?
Pete? Rob?
Take a shot, Madam Chair. The way the permanent fund works now is the AMHES and the entire ERA, the principal, is all invested in their asset allocation. And they have an unrealized and a realized earnings flow. The realized earnings stream is their statutory net minus the AMHES, which then goes back into the AMHES principal, currently anyway. and all the earnings go back in there. If the way this bill is written, the entire revenues, the earnings, realized earnings associated with that AMHES would flow into this capital income account. And there would be no inflation proofing because there's a, what's called a balance that was originally invested at $425 million, and any realized earnings are then paid out. The unreal, there could be an accounting of unrealized gains associated with that AMHES portion, but the way the principle of the permanent fund works is that's just part of the permanent fund unrealized earnings, and it's all just accounting. Same thing with the principle right now. Principle is just an accounting notion, so whereas the market value of the permanent fund is far in excess.
Yeah, so
I'm not sure that.
Yeah, so why can't we have the unrealized gains of the Amerada Hess stay with the Amerada Hess principle, and therefore it would be an appreciated.
I think you could. It's a matter of structuring it that way.
Thank you.
One of the things we need to kind of come back to, though, is this is all May language. This doesn't say we're going to do this every year. It just says we may provide money to the capital income fund.
And Madam Chairman, thank you for bringing that up. To get to Senator Sedman's concern, any valid public purpose would mean also the legislature could choose to appropriate money from the capital income fund back into the Amerada Hess sub-account
if
it chose to.
Yeah, this is not a mandate. It does not say there's going to be an automatic, we're going to do the calculation, and at the end of the calculation, it's going to go to this fund. It still has to come through this process, has to show the valid public fund and move from that point. Other questions?
Madam Chairman,
just
add one more comment on the cash flow from the fund. Mm-hmm. If you guys, like it's structured now in the capital bill, spend $60 million, appropriate $60 million, if the revenue fell short, I'm not sure it would be critical given that capital projects don't spend all the money in 1 year. I mean, you're going to have like several years of expenditures, and the revenue would seem to fall into place in future years.
Because we generally leave money on the table each year. Capital money sits there that is never expended. You'll see our budget is filled with lapses from previous projects that never even got, some of which didn't get started, some of which got halfway, expended half that money, and then any other questions? Is there anyone else to testify on this bill? Let me set this aside for now, and we'll take a brief at ease. Order. On House Bill 187, with the inflation proofing and mechanism at the Amerada Hess, the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Are there any further questions? Is there anyone else to testify? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 187 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
There being no objection, House Bill 187 is moved from Finance Committee. Thank you. Are you ready? Senate Bill 102. Joe Balash. The two of you are here. Oh, good.
I don't understand.
If you'd introduce yourself, say you represent, and give us the presentation, please.
Why throw more money?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Latch. I'm aide to Senator Gary Stevens, and here to offer our support to the committee substitute for Senate Bill 102 that Joe from Senator Terrio's office is going to present. This CS encompasses what Senator Stevens was hoping to do with his version of the bill, and that's give coastal districts more time to get their plan revisions in order for the to meet the requirements of statute that was put into place 2 years ago. And I'll turn it over to Joe.
So, in order to do that, we added 10 pages. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I know there's a lot of repeat language and very little actual change, but did strike some language. And Joe, take it away.
And away we go. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, my name is Joe Balash, staff to the Budget and Audit Committee. The CS in front of you does basically four things. It extends the deadlines contained in House Bill 191 that passed 2 years ago, largely in accordance with what the governor indicated he would support, 6 months across the board. There's one exception to that, and that is on the deadline for the submission of the revised local plans. That has been given an additional 2 months so that the districts will be able to see what standards the federal agency OCRM approves prior to putting in their final submissions to the department. It also, and this is where the 10 pages comes from, Madam Chair, provides for a sunset of the program July 1st, 2011. And that sunset date was chosen so that we can get through the full implementation of the program, the changes to the program, get through federal approval of not only the state standards but also the local district plans, and then provide 4 years of operation of the program, just like we do for any of our other boards and commissions and other regulatory bodies. It also clarifies the scope of the local district plans, and there's a change that I'd like to come back to in a moment. And then it finally automatically makes changes to the old district plans that the legislature has indicated twice previously in the past 3 years that it would like to see made. And if I may, I'd like to speak to the changes to this draft that need to be made.
Thank you.
On page 11, section 14, there is some substantial new language and language that's eliminated. What we need to do is go back to the original language in the statute, and on line 14, where it says may, change it to shall.
Okay, can you tell me what version we're looking at?
I'm sorry, this is version P, as in Peter.
Okay, it's page 11.
Page 11.
Line?
Lines 10 through 16.
10 through 16, okay.
The new text that was added.
We should be in line 12, change
yes.
to May, shall to May.
I'm sorry. Let me start over here. Line 12, where shall is the new word, all of that text that is new, we should go back to the old language, the original language in the statute.
So and the language that has been deleted currently is may not duplicate, restate, or incorporate, and we're going to go back and incorporate that language?
We want to go back okay. to that language, and then on line 14, the word may needs to be shall.
Okay. It's currently in the deleted language. And
correct.
We would go back and have shall, not duplicate. Okay, okay. Does everyone understand that amendment? Okay, now do we need to have that amendment right here? Are we doing a conceptual, or have you incorporated that into another CS?
Madam Chair, I do not have another CS. A conceptual amendment would do it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment, page 11, the P version. Starting in line 12, it would read, AS 4640070 and shall not duplicate, comma, restate, comma, or incorporate by reference statute and administrative regulations adopted by state or federal agencies, period. Right?
Thank you.
Before we do that, however, we have to adopt a CS. I did not realize we had not done that. Senator Wilken, could I move?
Madam Chair, move the committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 102, version P, done by Bullock on 5-2 as our working document.
Okay. Senator Dyson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt a conceptual amendment, which is what I just said a minute ago.
As you just said previously. Is there any objection to amendment number one, which deals with lines 10 through 16. Thank you. Back to you, Joe.
Thank
amendment
you.
Number one adopted.
And then finally, the in section 20, on page 12, line 25, sections 1 through 13 are the cleanup language, all the references to the coastal management program, and consistency determinations in other areas of statute. And section 17, which is a fairly lengthy repeal section, is designed to be a sunset provision that will be renewed in the future. However, we don't have anything in the bill currently that links to direction for the ledge auditor to conduct a sunset review. And so if we could ask for another conceptual amendment that the Alaska Coastal Management Program be added to AS 4466020.
66020?
That's correct.
And that is a listing of agencies that are eligible for audits?
Madam Chair, 4466010 is a list of boards and commissions. 4466020 is a list of programs.
Programs?
Yes.
Okay, it's a list of programs eligible for audit.
Correct.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Then I will need an amendment. That an amendment to would be that coastal zone management be added to 44.66020 and would be a program eligible for audit at the appropriate. Senator Hamilton.
Madam Chair, I move conceptual amendment number two to add the Alaska Coastal Management Act to AS 44.66.020.
Is that correct, Joe?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there objection? Amendment 2 is adopted.
And finally, Madam Chair, on behalf of the administration, they've requested that they be granted authority to issue emergency regulations to implement this act. After speaking with legislative drafters, they informed us that DNR already has the statutory authority necessary. They simply need to issue a written finding. However,
they simply need additional what?
They simply need to issue a written finding that an emergency exists. However, the department would like the legislature just to make it clear that there is the necessity of issuing an emergency reg.
Okay, do you have that language?
I do. Would you care for me to read it?
I would love to have that. Yeah, please.
Sure. Uncodified law is amended to add a new section, emergency regulations. The need to adopt regulations consistent with this act is declared an emergency, and the Department of Natural Resources shall proceed to adopt emergency conforming regs to implement the provisions of this act.
Maybe we could get that copied.
Sure.
And we could post that as amendment number three. We'll take a brief of these.